Hello and welcome to Sit for Speaks. On this month's episode, we are focusing on adult social care and the charging reforms. We will be hearing from Karen Fuller, who is Corporate Director for Adult Social Care at Oxfordshire County Council, as she shares their experience as one of the six trailblazers who implemented the charging reforms earlier than the rest of the country. We'll then be joined by Dr. William Burns, Social Care Policy Advisor at SIPFA, who will share insights from SIPFA's recently published Charging for Adult Social Care in England, Reform and Roots Forward report. Last but not least, we'll be joined by Vicky Davis, Director of Local Government Value for Money at the National Audit Office, as she discusses the NAO's report on adult social care reform. So stay tuned. Up first, we'll hear from Karen Fuller.
So today on Sit for Speaks, I'm joined by Karen Fuller, who is Corporate Director for Adult Social Care at Oxfordshire County Council. Karen, please could you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your role?
Yeah, so hello everyone. My name's Karen Fuller, and as we said, I'm Corporate Director for Adult Social Care in Oxfordshire County Council. So what does that mean? That means I'm responsible for all adult services across the County Council. So that's probably from 16 years and upwards. Have a wide area with a really interesting job.
Fantastic. So this episode of the podcast is focusing on SIPFA's Adult Social Care Charging Reform Report. And Oxfordshire County Council was chosen as one of the six trailblazers who implemented the charging reforms earlier than the rest of the country. Could you tell us a bit about the process of that and how it worked in practice?
Absolutely. So Oxfordshire County Council, we were one of the late additions to the trailblazer. So we were six trailblazer. So we started being a trailblazer probably 4 months after the other authorities. Why were we chosen? Because I think at the time we were approached because the characteristics of a large county council, and I think probably in the southeast area with a relatively high population of wealth. I think the county council in terms of Oxfordshire also has a high level of self-funders. As I understand it, there was a lack of data at the time around self-funders, and you know, what did that mean for the reform? So it was really valuable that we were able to join the trailblazers. I think at the time, in terms of how did that work, as trailblazers, we met on a regular basis. So independently from the Department of Health and Social Care, together as a collective, but we also work very, very closely with the Department of Health and Social Care and the Local Government Association. And the difference in terms of the trailblazers, in terms of authorities, they were quite wide. So we were able to bring together and galvanise all the learning we had from different populations and different areas to look at feeding in some information about how the reforms could potentially work.
Great. As you mentioned, Oxfordshire County Council was approached because of its characteristics, a large county council in the southeast with a relatively high population of wealth. And the council also has quite a high level of self-funders. So there is a lack of data about self-funders. So how did you go about learning more about the demographic in your area, and what did you learn?
So in terms of the demographic specifically for Oxfordshire, as I've said, we've got a high proportion of nursing homes within the area. And I think per capita of the population, which we always knew from our own data, is that we have a wealthy county, and some people take, you know, the lifestyle decision to move into care homes earlier than other local authorities. So as part of the exercise, we had to understand our number of care home placements across the county and then understand how these were funded and whether they were privately funded or the local authority. We maintain as a local authority the data in respect of the number of vacancies within care homes, which we get, which the local providers share with us. And therefore, it was possible for us to aggregate the data upwards to make some reasonable approximations about what did that mean potentially. But I think the proposed reforms were complex. And I think it is really important to say that, because whilst those people were already in a care home or receiving care, the data that we could work out with the market to achieve what was more challenging was estimating the number of people who may fall within that financial bracket, which we did not have that information on. So essentially, we had to do a lot of, I suppose, scrutinise the data intelligently to make some assumptions about what that meant for us as a county council.
And I know that digital innovation was flagged as a real opportunity in Oxfordshire. So what kinds of things were put in place? What kind of digital innovations were used and how successful were they?
So using Oxfordshire as an example, from the data analysis that we did, we anticipated that we would see our referral rate for people accessing care or support for a care account would probably be 100% increase. So it was really clear that we could not manage that significant change in demand through our usual processes. And I think it's a well-known fact that staffing has been a challenge. So we had a really exciting opportunity to look at innovation and some of the digital opportunities in that space. So like many other authorities, we were really keen to consider what self-assessment opportunity existed and how ported assessments might work for those people who are looking for care cap accounts only. So we, whilst we were doing the trailblazing work, we pursued this work. And I think noting that we were 4 months behind the other trailblazers, had to do this at pace. So working strategically with our IT colleagues to look at what was the art of the possible and how could we do things very quickly was something that was really beneficial for us. But also it showed what we could achieve by looking at digital and opportunities through a different lens. We pursued the work obliquely with some alterations as we were learning as we were going, and worked with people to tell us about themselves in their own words and how we could implement that in a digital way.
Could you give any examples of digital platforms that were used and how they were used?
Yes, so when people first come to the County Council, the information that's available on our website needed updating. So we worked with some of our residents to look at what was helpful, what format would that be. We've also looked at thinking about online self-assessment, so people having the opportunity to populate in their own words what their needs are and what their opportunities are. But also one of the other areas, noting that a lot of the work which would have been generated by forms was associated with the financial assessment. So we looked at implementing an online financial assessment, which again is something that we piloted and that we have subsequently rolled out within Oxfordshire.
Fantastic. So do you think those digital platforms, you kind of mentioned that there was one there that is going to be rolled out. Are there others that you will continue to use? Do you think that was quite a successful aspect of the Trailblazer programme?
Yeah, really, really successful. And I think also identified the opportunities of doing probably Care Act assessments in a slightly different way and looking at how we can streamline things. But also from our perspective, I think using, I suppose, digital in another way, looking at how we can work with some of our care providers for trusted assessor reviews. So again, these are something that we started within Trailblazer, but as a county council, we've decided to continue with, because what we learned within the pilot timeframe, it was evident that we could make some efficiencies in terms of time and also probably work with residents of Oxfordshire in a very different way. And they haven't got to wait in terms of doing the financial assessment. They can do it in their own time, which doesn't necessarily have to be within the working day or the working week.
That sounds fantastic and so much easier for residents as well. Sometimes when you're bringing in changes like that, particularly kind of digital innovations that people might be a bit wary of, it can be a bit of a challenge. Did you find that that was challenging, or was it relatively easy to implement those changes?
It was relatively easy once we got our IT working as we needed it to work. But also I think probably the opportunity of being a trailblazer, we were able to trial that and make amendments as we went along. And I think it'd be fair to say that having the opportunity to be a trailblazer absolutely escalated our thinking in respect of self-assessment and the opportunities for the Care Act and financial assessments. And it encouraged us to think more broadly and more innovatively.
And it would be really good to hear about other new solutions and innovations that were brought in through this project, kind of moving away from the digital but kind of other aspects, and what the learnings were overall for you.
So the self-assessment, but again, I think as part of our work from our end-to-end processes, but also looking at our engagement with the residents, looking at how we could lean some of our end-to-end process through automation. So that's something that we're continuing to look at, haven't quite finalised that yet. But again, alongside that, working with our skilled officers and targeting their support in terms of how could this change. And I think really encouraging staff when they're going about their work to say, what could we do? How could we lean this? And how would it look like if we did something different? And again, I think that engagement and that enthusiasm was really galvanised through the Trailblazer process.
So obviously, as I mentioned, change can take time, and it's always a challenge bringing in new measures and techniques wherever you work. So what do you think Oxfordshire County Council could have done better, and what advice would you give to other councils bringing in similar projects and changes?
Change takes time. And I think for the County Council, I'm really proud of the work that we did within the timescale. So being, like I said, 4 months after the other trailblazers, we had to set up very quickly. And I think really the rest of the council was very supportive with the approach, because I think from an adult social care perspective, our success was based on the support of the more strategic teams. So whether it was IT, whether it was HR, doing things very differently. So we had the buy-in from the whole county council. So my advice would be never, ever underestimate the time resource required to undertake an analysis of what activity will have to be stepped down in order to do some stuff, and actually the leaning opportunities. What did help us is that we stepped up a programme management approach, and with a dedicated project team looking with different strands associated with reform, so that we had everything working in parallel. And as you go along as a project, like with any change management programme, it's crucial to identify learning that could support business as usual as well. And that should include circumstances that change the valuable learning that can be taken forward in future projects. So it was very, very iterative in terms of what we did. I think from a county council perspective, we absolutely learned that we were able to step up complex accounts and self-serve options in rapid timescales, but the full implementation would have required additional funding, and that wasn't available. And I think we've had to look at what is our priority in terms of our approach and how we work with residents moving forward. And I think, as I've said, some of the benefits we did see from some of the self-assessments, we have decided to continue investing in them to make the changes that we intended.
So having to be quite sort of strategic about decision making and kind of prioritising what absolutely is needed and what kind of maybe could wait until later?
Yes, but also in terms of making some of the changes, looking at the opportunities wider than the county council, i.e. working with providers, what could we do differently, but also some of the internal relationships that we had. You know, if we were making some changes that would benefit how we interacted with people, what other opportunities were there with other directorates across the county council, hence why the absolute strategic support we had was vital to the success that we had within the reform programme.
Fantastic. Well, it sounds like it's been really successful and that you've learned quite a lot actually, which is very encouraging. Thank you so much for giving up your time today and joining me on Sit for Speaks.
Thank you.
That was Karen Fuller, Corporate Director for Adult Social Care at Oxfordshire County Council. Up next, we'll be joined by Dr. William Burns, Social Care Policy Advisor at SIPFA.
Hi, Will, and thanks for joining us today on SIPFA Speaks. So we're going to be discussing the insights from SIPFA's recently published Charging for Adult Social Care in England, Reform and Roots Forward report. To kick off, please could you firstly tell our listeners a little bit about your role at SIPFA?
Hi, Jess. Yes, of course. So my name is Dr. Will Burns, and I am SIPFA's Social Care Policy Advisor. And my role is divided between SIPFA's policy and network teams. So in SIPFA Networks, I run the Social Care Network, and we host events throughout the year aimed at supporting our subscribers and carrying out their social care roles effectively. And we keep them up to date with the latest social care news and policies and funding announcements and so on. To give you an example of that, in February 2024, we're hosting an event on learning the lessons from local authority adult social care assurance. That's going to be a free event and anyone can attend. Later in 2024, we're going to have some events on finance business partnering in social care, managing demand, delivering best value data, and our popular introduction to adults and children's social care. And for the listeners out there, you can learn about joining the network by visiting our social care landing page, Building Sustainable Social Care. On the policy side, I act as SIPFA's policy voice on social care, so I contribute to our thought leadership and try to influence the national social care conversation to support SIPFA's members and improve local authority and social care financial sustainability. And as part of that, I produce documents such as the Insight Report on Adult Social Care Charging Reform that I'm here to speak to you about today.
Brilliant. And it's great to hear all about what you've got coming up in 2024. So the charging reforms that we are discussing were originally planned to be implemented in October 2023. However, following the autumn statement last year, the implementation date has been pushed back to October 2025. In light of this, please could you tell us how the report came about?
SIPFA has a track record of producing thought leadership in social care and supporting our social care colleagues in their roles. So the reason for this is that SIPFA is dedicated to excellent public financial management. And for local authorities with adult social care responsibilities, social care comprises the major part of their budgets. So it's essential that social care finance is sustainable if local authority finance is to be sustainable. In the past, we've produced publications on integrating care, managing demand in social care, adult social care reform after COVID, and we also have a range of publications in children's social care. But I'll give you some context for this publication. In 2019, Boris Johnson stood on the steps of Downing Street promising to, quote, fix the crisis in social care once and for all. And as part of that mission, there were a number of policy papers published looking at reforming elements of the social care system. Part of that was charging reform. So that was about making reforms to how people pay for social care in England. As you say, these reforms were initially timetabled for implementation in October 2023. And there were five trailblazer authorities who were introducing the reforms earlier than the rest of the country. But in the autumn statement 2022, the Chancellor Jeremy Hunt announced that implementation would now be in October 2025. So this delay gave us at SIPFA the opportunity to speak to our colleagues in local government, listen to their concerns, take stock of the proposed reforms and make recommendations that would maximise the chances of successful implementation of charging reform. So we've produced this report. We set out five principles for a sustainable and equitable social care system. Those principles are centred on funding, prevention, fairness and policy alignment. And these principles serve as a touchstone throughout the report, and we measure different charging scenarios against the principles. We look at the challenges in the current social care charging system and look at the strengths and weaknesses of the government's proposed reforms. We also look at three social care roadmaps that have been published from across the sector, and we make a series of recommendations to government on adult social care charging reform.
The report finds that the current adult social care charging system is unfair, unpredictable and complex. Please could you talk us through some of the main challenges with the current charging system?
That's right, Jess. The current charging system has remained unchanged in principle for almost a century, and there are a range of criticisms of the system. So I'll talk a little bit about a few of them just now. First of all, there's no limit to what you can pay for your social care apart from your personal wealth. So the government actually estimates that one in seven people aged 65 will pay over £100,000 for their care. That's sometimes known as catastrophic costs. But it's also important to note that what constitutes a catastrophic cost can vary depending on your level of wealth. Next, as you say, the current system is complex. So determining how much you're going to pay towards your care involves a complicated calculation that brings in your assets, income, savings, etc. And the complicated nature of the calculation can make it difficult for people to prepare for their care costs. The capital limits used in the financial assessment to determine if you qualify for local authority support aren't regularly uplifted with inflation, and in fact have stayed frozen at 2010-11 levels. So this means that the assessment is increasingly restrictive and fewer people are accessing support for their care costs, and that can have a negative impact in areas such as unmet need, demand and complexity of need. Another problem with the current system is that it's contributing to market instability. As the National Audit Office has shown, many local authorities use their position as large buyers of care to secure low rates from care providers, but these rates are actually unsustainably low and risks providers exiting the market or handing back contracts. So this is also the reason why people who fund their own care pay more for the same care packages than local authorities do, which isn't fair. So if you look in the publication, you'll find some of the other issues with the current charging system that we at SIPFA identified.
What are the government's proposed charging reforms?
In summary, we can think of the government's proposed charging reforms in four parts. Okay, so I'll just talk you through them. First of all, there's the £86,000 lifetime cap on personal care costs. As I said, currently there's no limit to what you can pay towards your care. So this reform would limit the amount that you can pay towards your care. Second are the reforms to the financial assessment. So the upper capital limit is going to go up to £100,000 and the lower capital limit will increase to £20,000. This means that more people are going to qualify for local authority financial support for their care costs. People will get to keep more of their assets before they pay from their income only. Third, there is the implementation of Section 18.3 of the Care Act. So currently, only people who receive local authority financial support for their care costs can request that their council arranges their care for them. But by implementing Section 18.3, people who fund their own care will also be able to make this request to their councils. And then finally, there's the fair cost of care and market sustainability. So as I've said, there are many local authorities who pay unsustainably low rates to providers, and that can exacerbate the risk of market failure. So this reform is about understanding what a fair cost of care in a local area is, and local authorities moving towards paying this rate in an effort to bolster the sustainability of care markets.
I know that there will be additional costs associated with implementing the charging reforms. Where will this leave local authorities when it comes to financial sustainability and resilience?
Exactly right, Jess. Each element of the proposed charging reforms is going to come with cost to local authorities. So there's going to be increased assessments, reviews and care management as more people become eligible for local authority financial support. So this additional work is going to require thousands of additional staff across the country, which obviously will come at cost to local authorities. But also, this is at a time when Skills for Care is telling us that there are over 150,000 vacancies in the social care sector. So these additional roles are going to be very challenging to fill. A theme across the charging reforms, with the exception of the fair cost of care, is that more people will be brought into the local authority adult social care system. So once people reach the cap, the local authority would pay for their care. The more generous financial means test, it means that more people are going to qualify for support. And implementing Section 18.3 means that local authorities would be arranging care for self-funders who they currently don't arrange care for. So all of these elements will require financial and operational resources to first prepare for implementation and then to carry out once they become business as usual. And then we have the fair cost of care. So local authorities are going to have to pay the difference between what they're currently paying and then what is established as the fair cost of care in their area. And we've seen some eye-watering sums from stakeholders for this element of the reforms. Now, it's absolutely essential that local authorities are fully funded to deliver in each of these areas. If the funding they're allocated is insufficient, then money might have to be diverted from other local government services to pay for them. We saw last year a number of local authorities issuing Section 114 notices where they couldn't balance their books as they're legally obliged to do. And we're hearing that demand-led services such as adult social care may be a key driver in future Section 114 notices. So it really is essential that current pressures in social care are fully funded and that any proposed reforms additional to these current pressures are fully funded as well.
Lastly, it would be really good to hear about SIPFA's recommendations and alternative proposals identified in the report.
We make a series of recommendations aimed at central government that are based on our five principles for a sustainable and equitable social care charging system. So the first principle is about starting afresh. That's with a fresh understanding of needs, demand, cost and spending. So the recommendations for this principle include carrying out a zero-based spending review exercise so that we can move away from the incremental budgeting we have today, where more and more money is being spent without necessarily improving outcomes. We also recommend that the government produces a new impact assessment for charging reform, given the significant changes in the public financial landscape we've seen since 2022. And we recommend revisiting the cost of care exercises as well, because we do have some concerns about the response rates and the original cost of care exercises. The second principle is about providing adequate long-term funding and certainty of funding to local authorities. So our recommendation centred on plugging the local authority financial gap, providing a long-term funding settlement to allow multi-year planning, and basically ensuring that any programme of social care reform is fully funded. The next principle centred on prevention, and our recommendations were about placing greater emphasis on prevention and improving access to social care. Fourth principle is about addressing unfairness in the system. So our recommendations are about ensuring that it doesn't matter where you are, who you are, that there's equity in how social care is charged for. And finally, the fifth principle and the recommendations based on that principle are about reducing barriers between social care and other public services. So if you look at that report, there's more detail on each of the recommendations, and you can download the report from the SIPFA website at www.sipfa.org/sipfa-thinks/insight, and the report's titled Charging for Adult Social Care in England, Reform and Routes Forward.
That's great to hear. Lovely to speak with you, Will. Thank you. That was Dr. William Burns, Social Care Policy Advisor at SIPFA. We're now going to speak to Vicky Davis, Director of Local Government Value for Money at the National Audit Office. Vicky, please could you introduce yourself and tell us about your role?
Well, thanks, Jess, for inviting me along to talk to you about this today. As you say, I'm a director at the National Audit Office. For those who don't know, the NAO is the UK's independent public spending watchdog, and we support Parliament in holding government to account, and we help improve public services through our work. As you say, I am the director for Local Government Value for Money, which means that I head up our work that covers local authorities here at the National Audit Office. And this includes work such as our recent report on reforming adult social care.
Thank you. So we are going to be discussing the NAO's report on adult social care reform. Could you tell us how this report came about?
Adult social care is a topic that we have covered before a number of times. So there have been a range of reports that we have produced. In 2020, we reported on the readiness for COVID. In 2021, we talked about adult social care markets. And in 2018, we reported on the care workforce. We at the NAO and the Committee of Public Accounts, so the parliamentary committee that takes a lot of our work, have previously called for a cross-government long-term funded vision for care. And government, of course, announced its plans for adult social care reforms in 2021 and announced funding attached to those, which were designed to help it deliver its plans. Now, at the same time, adult social care is an area of significant and rising demand-led financial pressure for local government. And in 2022, there were a number of changes made to the reform plans, which were really responding to some concerns that government had about increasing pressure in the system. So this was high inflation and also related to hospital discharge, which we'll come on to talk a little bit more about shortly. So taking all of those things together, it felt important to return to the subject and also to follow up on some of the things that we had been recommending back in 2021 and really see where things had gotten to. So we decided we report now, recognising, of course, that this was still a relatively early stage of implementation of the reforms, but really we wanted to have more impact by reporting on what's been happening and to make recommendations as to how to help improve delivery. Our report focused on system reforms. So obviously there are two sides to the adult social care reforms. There's charging reform, and I'm mindful of the report that SIPFA has recently published on charging reform. Our report covered that by way of context, but mainly focused on system reform. And we looked at and examined three things, really. The key pressures and challenges that were in and are in adult social care in England. The Department of Health and Social Care's response to those increasing pressures on the system that were emerging during 2022. And also how that department was delivering reform and progress against its commitments. So we decided to look at all those three things, as I say, relatively early in implementation, but with the aim of us being able to say something relatively early about the direction and to make some recommendations that would be helpful to the department.
And can you tell us about how social care reform has progressed since the autumn statement in 2022?
In 2022, the Department of Health and Social Care was really becoming quite concerned about the rising inflation and the impact that was having on the sector. At the same time, ministers were concerned about growing delays to hospital discharge and the possible impact that some delays in arranging care for people leaving hospital might be having on those numbers. And so taking all of that together, and of course, the sector themselves were asking questions about the reform plans in that context. So what happened, autumn statement 2022, was that charging reform was delayed. It was originally planned to come in by October 2023, and the decision was made to pause that with the aim of bringing it back in October 2025. At the same time, there was £7.5 billion committed at the autumn statement. £2.7 billion of that was new central government funding. Some of the other funding, and we set this out in our report, was funding that was repurposed, if you like. So money reallocated from charging reform budget, and there was also additional flexibility for authorities to increase the money that they raised through the adult social care precept in council tax. So there are a few different things that were happening then, and the idea was that this funding commitment would really help the sector to stabilise, ease the immediate pressures and make improvements. What also happened to do all of those things is that the Department of Health and Social Care scaled back its short-term plans for system reform.
And following these changes to adult social care reform plans, what has happened to the funding for social care reform?
So as I say, yes, the charging reform funding was largely reallocated and provided to local authorities through social care grant, which was available for local authorities to decide how they wanted to spend that, either in adults and children's care actually as well. And then on the system reform side, the funding for system reform, which had originally been £1.7 billion, reduced to 729 million, so just over 700 million. And that is a budget that takes us through to 2024-25. And what that looks like, really, that change of budget is it represents a 58% fall over the 3 years that were set out back in 2021. And then there were a few aspects within that system reform that changed to bring the budget down from 1.7 billion to 729 million. One of those was a plan that was set out in the white paper in 2021, which was to use money to integrate housing into local health and care strategies. So really, we're talking about supported housing here, set to be around 300 million spent on that. That was removed. And also money for workforce reforms had been planned to spend up to around 500 million. And the money for those reforms reduced to 250 million.
Has the extra funding for adult social care created a more stable funding system?
It's a really good question. What I'm mindful of is we don't know where the system may have been if it had not been for these interventions either. At the time that we reported, we were seeing some recent signs of improvement in things such as the number of workforce vacancies, but those still were very high at around 152,000 workforce vacancies at the end of the last financial year, at the end of 22-23. And to get there was a reliance on overseas recruitment as well. As the department pointed out yesterday in a Committee of Public Accounts session, the monthly data they're seeing, we were looking at annual data, the monthly data they have seen since then is indicating to them that the vacancy rates are coming down, they're continuing to reduce, but it will be some months before that annual data set for 23-24 is available to us. On the other side, our data in our report talks about waiting lists, and you can see a trend down in recently in waiting lists reducing to March 2023, which is the latest data available to us at the time. We need to recognise people were still waiting for longer though than they had been. More recent data that has come out, which is the ADAS autumn survey, suggests that the waiting lists have grown since then and in recent months. So it is quite a mixed picture. I would also say that there was some analysis done last summer by the department which showed local authorities, in terms of their financial pressures, were saying that overall they looked like they could cover the cost and demand pressures they were facing on adult social care in 23-24. But that analysis was done some months ago, and there was within that some local variations. So some signs that some authorities may still be facing some financial difficulties in meeting the demand for care.
And on that note, I guess, what are the risks to delivery of adult social care reform?
The risks we set out in our report really talk to the many things maybe going on at once for a sector that is really still under significant pressure. So you will have the department restarting charging reform activity to deliver by the revised date of October 2025. Work will need to be getting going now, and that will be going on at the same time as the system reform activity, which I should just say we reported was running behind schedule even on the revised plans. So to deliver system reform as well as returning to charging reform really asks questions of the capacity both within the department and the sector to return to that. There are also questions, of course, with charging reform around where the funding for doing that activity will come from. Some other risks to mention is a fair degree of uncertainty still over what a fair cost of care is, so what a local authority would pay a provider and how much that will cost local authorities, which will of course feed into conversations about funding to local authorities. Also, there was an exercise that the department had carried out. There is an acceptance that there is a need to return to running that exercise to really bottom this out more. The last couple of things I'd mentioned by way of risks is that there is no long-term plan for achieving its vision. So with adult social care, the plan goes through to 24-25. The vision, the white paper, is a 10-year vision, and everyone would welcome the fact that that is a long-term view, but there has to be an acceptance that the funding certainty is not there. A lot of the decisions around what happens with reform will depend on the next spending review and decisions that are taken there around funding out to local government and funding for adult social care. The final risk I would mention here is the lack of a theory of change for how the system reform measures contribute to the long-term reform outcomes. The department has plans to evaluate its reform activity, which will be incredibly useful. but the department hasn't set out how it's planned system reforms, the revised system reforms this is after reprioritising, hasn't set out how those are going to take it in the direction of delivering its white paper. So how are the short-term system reforms going to help deliver that long-term vision?
That does sound like a really big challenge. And so my last question would be, looking ahead towards the challenge of successfully reforming adult social care, what are the NAO's recommendations?
One of the things we said in our report conclusion is that to maximise its chances of succeeding, so delivering this vision, the Department of Health and Social Care will need to make sure it understands how the different strands of its reforms relate to each other, the cumulative impact on local authorities and other stakeholders, and it must be clear what the critical steps are, manage against those closely, and put the governance in place that it needs to manage delivery risks effectively. Some specific recommendations we have in our report relate to that, really about assessing the impact of the current and planned reform interventions on local authorities to make sure everything is manageable. Setting out a costed plan to the sector for returning to charging reform from October 2025, and incorporating the lessons learned so far. So, of course, the trailblazers that they were carrying out before charging reforms were paused. And when it is returning to charging reforms alongside system reform, making sure that the department has the capacity and capability to deliver this, but also publishing a long-term plan, mapping its reform activity and the funding it needs to achieve those planned outcomes. There is a transparency aim there that I think the sector would very much welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Vicky, for giving up your time today and for joining me on Sit for Speaks.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Vicky Davis, Director of Local Government Value for Money at the National Audit Office. That's all we've got time for on this month's episode. We'd like to say a huge thank you to Karen Fuller, Dr. William Burns and Vicky Davis for joining us on this important episode of Sit for Speaks. Make sure to follow us on social media for more and to ensure you never miss an episode. Previous episodes of Sit for Speaks can be found on Sitfor's website or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. We'll be back next month. Until then, goodbye.